Hello everyone, welcome or welcome back to Real Recovery. In today's episode, it's a really exciting one, it's a bit different. I am interviewing another amazing guest. Her name is Victoria and she has her own podcast, by the way, called The Body Love Binge. We talked about all sorts, honestly, including motivation, how to get started in recovery, how to deal with not feeling in control, recovery coaches online perhaps, offering less than helpful advice, covered extreme hunger as well. She has some amazing insight and some really valuable advice for people. But yeah, let's get into the episode.
Morning, Ivy.
Hey, it's so great to have you on. So do you want to just introduce yourself for everyone listening if they don't know you already?
Yeah, absolutely. Good morning, Ivy, and welcome and hello to all your listeners as well. My name is Victoria Kleinsman and I'm a food freedom and body love coach. And how I became a coach is a very long story. I'll like make it very short, and I'm sure you're going to have questions around that. I recovered myself from anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder, and also an abusive relationship for 6 years as well. Hated my body, myself, for 20 years, and I've been on my own healing journey, and now I am where I am. I want to share this with others and teach women how to fall back in love with themselves, eat with intuition, all of that good stuff. And I absolutely love what I do.
Yeah, no, that really does come across as well. My first question, I suppose, is how and why did you choose to start recovery after so many years of being unwell, and like how, talk me through how that went really.
Yeah, I mean, I hit absolute rock bottom, and I don't want people to have to wait to hit their absolute rock bottom before they get help. Unfortunately, a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, we have very similar personality traits, you know, as well as you and I. Perfectionist, all or nothing, so much willpower, nothing's ever good enough. All of those characteristics actually contribute to the eating disorder. So, I mean, I was diagnosed with anorexia when I was 13. I'm going to use the word weight restored in quotes. I was weight restored at the age of around 18. The medical team let me go because I was in a quote healthy BMI. However, it was still underweight for my body. Just because I was in a healthy BMI, I naturally now sit outside the quote healthy BMI in the pre-obese weight range, like just the way that's the way that it is for my body. And so I actually was only, I wasn't even weight restored when I was discharged. I was not at a dangerously low weight, let's put it that way. However, I wasn't mentally well. I mean, most of the extreme anorexia behaviors I'd been kind of forced to let go of, aka not eating at all. I was eating, but that just morphed into bulimia, binge eating. It's the same eating disorder, just expressed in a different way. And it wasn't until I was 30, and now I'm 30, how old am I? 36. I don't even know how old I am right now because I just feel so young. 36 now. I didn't start my recovery until I was 30. And what made me recover was, like I said, my absolute rock bottom. I'd had another binge eating episode. And if the listeners, I'm sure, will know how soul destroying that feels, to the point where you're so physically full, you literally don't understand how you've physically eaten that much food and put it inside one human body. I hated myself for it so much. And this was a daily occurrence. It used to be monthly, then it kind of went to weekly. Then I would like purge and use the bulimia tendencies. But it got to the stage where I couldn't even like purge anymore, which is a good thing in hindsight. And I was just on the floor, like having a panic attack, just being so afraid of my own thoughts, wanting someone to come and save me and take me to a psychiatric hospital or something, because I just couldn't do this anymore. So I was like metaphorically waving the white flag, surrendering. I had no fight left in me. And trust me, from the age of 9, I was having a fucked up relationship with food, diagnosed with anorexia at 13. 30, what is that, like 15 years later, after I was quote weight restored, I was still in an eating disorder. So I got to absolute rock bottom. And I honestly said to myself, Ivy, I can't go on anymore. Like, I'm either gonna, I mean, I wasn't contemplating suicide, it didn't get that dark. But it was like, what's the point? What is the effing point in this life? I cannot do it anymore. And so then my mantra became, whatever it takes to get out of this shit I can swear, right? Because I think I've probably sworn already.
I think it'll be fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Whatever it takes to get out of this shithole that I'm in, I'm going to do it, because I've tried for enough years now. I'm done. And so it was every soul, every cell of my body was so done. I was ready for what was to come. And we can talk about that. I mean, that was hella scary, right? The weight gain, letting go of who I thought I was. But I was done. I just was absolutely done. And that's what unfortunately got me to the stage of where I then chose, and that's a really important word that I'm using, I chose recovery. I wasn't influenced or forced to or should. I actually wanted to recover at that point. And then I reached out for help.
Yeah. I think just hearing you talk about it, it's very relatable to a lot of people, I can imagine. But also just seeing where you are now, it's such a big difference. And like, I think that's just, yeah, it's going to be very like motivating for people listening. There was so much to talk about, and I have so many questions, but the point you made about you, like you chose to do it versus when you were recovering from anorexia and weight restoring technically, but not really. And I was wondering, what advice do you have for people who are kind of going through that anorexia treatment where they give you a meal plan, they just maybe some therapy, maybe not. What advice do you have for people to make that step in choosing it? If you know what I mean, if their mindset is not in that space and they haven't hit rock bottom and they kind of, the eating disorder wants them to, what advice do you give to people to kind of step out of it?
It's a great question, because I remember like it was only yesterday how I felt when I was being forced to weight restore. So what I would recommend is, and this can be really helpful through a powerful coach to reflect all of this back to you, but you can absolutely do it by yourself, to really let go of everyone outside of you wanting you to recover, right? And I get that it's difficult to do that when perhaps you're very blessed to have loving parents who of course want you to recover, and loving friends and family and all of that. So practice letting go of all of the other people's opinions and wants and desires for you, and really get honest with yourself and be like, right, what do I want? If I was to be fully honest with myself and look at my life 1, 2, 5, 10 years in the future, and I don't change anything or get the support because I choose to, what is my life going to look like? And then feel into that and take full responsibility, not blame. It is not anyone's fault that they are in an eating disorder. It's nobody's fault whatsoever. It's not even the fault of perhaps the trauma you've experienced, the abuse, whatever you've maybe experienced in your childhood. That's not to blame either. It is what it is. It's not fair. You shouldn't have to have ever gone through that, but it is what it is. It is your responsibility to heal that and to take a look at what your future might be like if nothing changes, and to actually face that. Because in the eating disorder, the eating disorder doesn't want you to see that. Of course it doesn't. It wants you to think, no, mine's the right way. We need to bring extra rules in. The ridiculous amount of rules I have. Oh my God, I couldn't even drink more than a cup of water for the whole day. I mean, even water was a restriction for me, because anything that was going inside me, I'd rather someone had pulled a gun to my head, to be honest. And so you have to get really honest with what your future could look like. And you have the strength to do that. And then when you've taken a look at what your future would look like if you did nothing different, it would only get worse, then you get to choose. And this is what most people don't do, especially professionals. They don't allow the patient or the client to actually make a choice of like, right, you can choose to stay in the anorexia. You can actually choose that if you want to. You know, like, it's a choice that only you can make, or you can choose to enter into recovery, which is scary and it's unknown and it might be very challenging. But what choice do you have? And kind of really reflect that back to the person, because it's only a choice that they can make. And honestly, if I had had that one conversation with someone who got it, so back in when I was recovering, I'm not slating any of the therapists and things like that. They were doing their best, but it was so clinical. It was so like this massive gap and distance between me and this woman talking, or this man talking to me. I couldn't relate. I just felt talked. It just felt awful. But if you can speak to someone with an open heart who's been through it, that's, to me, is gold. who really gets it and who understands all the fucked up thoughts that you're thinking, all the feelings that you're feeling, and has also overcome all of that. Just talking to someone who gets it, who's on the other side, can be really, really helpful. And it honestly just, again, comes back down to taking, number one, responsibility for where you want to go. And then number two, what do you choose? And then you need to find the right support to get you where you want to get to. But if you want to stay in the anorexia, then you can. But yeah. I don't want that for anybody, right?
No, it's so right about how sometimes, yeah, like therapists and professionals, they almost box you into your eating disorder and not really open up the possibility that you are responsible for your future and you can choose it. For me, for example, when I found your podcast, I was actually very lucky that I found it very like near to the beginning of my recovery. So when I heard you speak about things and also your delivery, you're very like coherent, and you just, I think it was the episode you made about like how to cope with weight gain or something, and you just like laid it out, and I was like, oh, there's actually a way. And I was so surprised. But anyway, so I think it's so right that there is a choice and there are examples of people living recovered lives. But yeah,
and no one's, I'd like to add a bit in there actually, it was a post that I posted recently that had like a lot of comments on, and this just came, as most of my posts do, directly from the heart. I was waiting, and this wasn't just for recovery, this was for like self-love, for life in general. I was unconsciously waiting metaphorically for a man on a white horse to come and save me, a fairy godmother to come and make everything okay. And, you know, I actually feel emotional as I'm saying this right now, because I just, and so we have so many unmet needs as children. I was just, and I had a good childhood, you know, there's trauma and stuff there, as there is with most of us, but I had a good childhood overall, but I was waiting for someone to come and save me. And I was always basing my worth on external validation, all of that. And when I really realized that there's no one coming to fucking save me, no one, I was so, my heart broke, actually. My heart broke open when I realized that there was no one could save me, right? People wanted to. My mum wanted to, my dad wanted to, my partner wanted to. They couldn't. And so when I fully realized that, oh shit, like literally I am the only person that can do this for me, that's when something shifted for me. So no one's going to come and say, people are there to support you 1000%, but no one can do it for you. And if, like I said, my heart broke open when I realized that. So it's not a case of like, oh yay, cool, like, yeah, now I get to create my life. Like that came later, but for, you know, weeks and probably months, I was in this like identity crisis of like, oh my god, who am I? No one can do it for me. Like, why are we here? I started asking questions that I've never even thought about before. And then after I kind of worked through that, I realized that, wait, I have the power within, I sound like I'm in a movie, I have the power within me to actually make choices to get where I want to get to with the right support. And then that, everything shifted from there.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to point that out. That was a big deal for me.
Yeah. I think everything you're saying is very true. And I also think resilience, especially I guess during early recovery or when it is incredibly like emotionally painful to do anything that's against your eating disorder, which kind of brings me to one of my questions, which is, how did you, I suppose it must have been like a series of steps, or you must have had to make this choice and this decision multiple times, but how did you kind of allow yourself to let go of control, or how did you cope with the feeling of being out of control without your eating disorder once you decided to choose to aim for recovery?
Yeah, that feeling was horrible. And again, I remember it like it was yesterday. I'm so glad I do what I do, because it just reminds me over and over again, number one, how far I've come. And number two, it doesn't allow me to forget what it was like to be in that place. And so the fastest way to recovery is going against every single thing the eating disorder says to you, which is fucked up because it feels like you are the eating disorder. So it's like, well, how is that even possible? And I want to say I started small, but I didn't, because, and some people have to, and that's completely fine. You know, there's no point in re-traumatizing yourself. I'm blessed with a very, very strong personality. And most of us are in eating disorders because our kind of, yeah, past trauma, but our characteristics have got us into the eating disorder in the first place. That was how it was developed. And so when I said at the beginning, when I really made a decision to recover, I said the word choice, which it was, but I just want to speak to the word decision, because the word decision comes from the Latin word decise, which means to cut away. And so a decision is like a man's mind made up, which is the strongest thing like in the world. Once you decide, there's no other option. Basically, you have like this laser beam focus of like, that is where I'm fucking going. And that's where I got this, whatever it takes from. And so when I started going against what the eating disorder wanted to do, oh my God, I would cry and shake and tremble and have a tantrum. Well, it wasn't me having a tantrum. It was my brain and the eating disorder, like having a massive tantrum and throwing all these feelings at me of, this is unsafe. You need to feel anxious. You need to stress right now. And I stressed and felt anxious, trust me. But there was just one, that little spark inside of me, that was the spark that realizes that I, me, whatever I am, like consciousness, whatever the hell we are, like that lights our bag of skin up and make you move and stuff like that, I get to choose. And so it was hell for the first few weeks, but honestly, it gets easier so quickly.
It does, it really does.
So helpful. So you've just got to get through that, honestly, if you do the opposite to what the eating disorder wants you to do 10 times in a row, your brain is starting to listen, because your brain's always watching you, right? Yeah. Your brain's always watching what you're doing. So if you constantly do something opposite to what you've always done, the first two times your brain's like, she needs to be doing the things that she used to do. So I'm going to send her guilt and shame and fear. And then when you do it five times, six times, the brain's like, yeah, she still needs to do, she's doing something wrong, and sends you all these feelings. On about the 10th time, your brain's kind of, if your brain could think separately like this, it's kind of like, well, she's kind of doing this repeatedly and consistently, so she must want to be doing the thing that she's doing. So therefore, I'm going to start to allow her to start to rewire me and do these things that she keeps doing, even though I'm sending her all these feelings of like fear and not safe and all of that. And so you have to just get through that initial part that is so challenging. And then when you get on the other side of that, then comes a fear of weight gain, because boom, you're hit with like, you're a bigger body, which is the worst thing in the absolute entire world if you have an eating disorder. And then you have to work through that. But it's possible. I mean, I turned it into, not at the beginning, as I got used to the, well, I may as well face my fear anyway, because this is clearly how you recover. I started kind of making it into a bit of a game, like a challenge. Okay, game's a bit too easy breezy, more like a challenge. And I was, again, I'm blessed that I have that, right, bring it the fuck on, I'm doing this personality. And I kind of just started challenging myself. And then when I learned how to actually have self-compassion, turns out you can be kind to yourself. It is a thing. That helped as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's so, it's a couple of things that you said about the personality thing. I've been thinking this recently, and this is why I appreciate your podcast and what you talk about specifically, because you've mentioned how like you have a strong personality, and sometimes I see that people in recovery who do all in recovery, or they go kind of that approach, they are very much like, I'm doing this, and they just push through and they use kind of momentum and whatever strength they have. And there's other people I actually think like me who not necessarily strong personality, but I'm very I think I'm resilient, and I think I would break it down a little bit more. And I think it's really interesting that you have kind of almost, you've kind of taken care of both kinds of people. I remember the episode you did about answering my question, I think, about autism and about how some people with that might want to like break it down a bit. And you've also obviously, you know, given encouragement and support to the people who can just push through and will just, that's how they will succeed. I just think that's interesting for listeners if they want to take that on board, because I think on social media, especially, I think there's a lot of, like, either you're like not recovering if you don't do X amount of like leaps forward, or, you know, I don't know. I just think it's interesting to like take into account what you need. And also what you said at the end about learning, you know, self-compassion and self-acceptance. I think that's such a major part of what you talk about, and it's so important. And it's something that I hadn't considered until I listened to you. I was like, this is really like, but it made so much sense, right? You kind of have to live with yourself your whole life, so you might as well at least respect yourself. So I want to know, how did you get from punishing yourself and, you know, berating yourself and for so many years, how did you get from that to where you are now? And what were like some of the key things you had to do, like on a daily basis?
Yeah, absolutely. And before I go into that, I just want to speak very briefly to what you've said. If those that are listening are like, I'm not a strong personality, I can't just go all in, it's okay. You 100,000% can recover. I've coached so many women through recovery who aren't like me in terms of like whatever it takes. And it's taken a little bit longer, and that is okay.
Yeah.
And it's just taking one day at a time, right? What can I do today that goes against the eating disorder without re-traumatizing myself? It's going to be scary. Of course it is. But with the right support, let's say you do one thing that day and then you're like, oh my God. And then you celebrate it with the person supporting you and you start to build that self-confidence and that momentum. And before you know it, you are recovered. So I just wanted to speak to that. Like, you don't have to go all in to recover. It's the quickest way, but it doesn't mean it's the right way for you. And you, anybody with any personality can 100% recover.
Yeah. And I think all in can be, it's a mindset more than what,
yes,
like your day-to-day actions. Because I think you can have the mindset of I am getting rid of this, no going back sort of thing, while at the same time you can, you know, do what you can, I suppose. And if your threshold is a little bit lower for stress tolerance, then so be it. But yeah, I think it's just really great message. Absolutely. Reassuring for people. But yeah,
so self-compassion then. Well, the first thing has to become awareness, right? I didn't realize that I got to choose the thoughts that I think. I want to make myself clear, I don't choose every thought I think, because, well, nobody does. Even the most advanced spiritual and personal development person in the world is human, and we have a brain that creates thoughts by itself based on your whole past history. However, when we realize that our thoughts are not facts and they're given to us because we've chosen to think them from when we were born and, you know, as we've been learning and growing and all of that, but we have the power to choose to create a thought that serves us, and then we get to choose whether we act on a thought or not. That's where the power comes. So step one for me was to actually notice, wait, I am not my thoughts. Just because they feel true to me, it doesn't mean they are true. So that opened a whole new door for me. So I started lovingly questioning my thoughts, the mean thoughts, the unkind thoughts, the do better, try harder, not good enough, all the thoughts that I'm sure you listeners and you are very familiar with. And the second thing was actually understanding that self-flagellation and all this pressure and discipline, it didn't even work anymore. So like, take away all this love and kindness and nicey self-love stuff, which is everything, by the way, but practically it doesn't even work though. So if you want to get a quote, let's talk logical brain here, a result being recovering from an eating disorder, you're better off choosing and practicing self-kindness and compassion instead of like pushing yourself with discipline and being mean to yourself, because self-compassion, and this is scientifically proven, actually works in terms of gets you to where you want to be. It's like the tortoise and the hare, right? That, let's say the hare is unkind, discipline, not good enough thoughts. They're going to get you quite far quite quickly, because that's why you've chosen them, because they served you at some point in your life. But then they bring you, it's too fast, too quick. But the tortoise, on the other hand, self-compassion, self-love, is a bit slower, but it just keeps going and going. And you actually can enjoy the ride. You can look around you and look at the flowers and look at the trees, and it feels nice. But it's practice, right? I imagine like two kind of things in a way, like on my shoulders. Like one, the left side of me was the mean, for some reason it was my left, which actually, thinking out loud, the left side of your body is the feminine side. And I was so out of balance and always in my masculine, like the do, the go, the having to discipline, which is why my feminine was out of balance, just randomly came to me. So the left side for me was this evil, not good enough, pushing yourself voice. The right side was a self-compassion, love, kindness voice. That was really small, and the other side was really big. But the one that survives and the one that grows is the one you feed the most. And how do you feed these? By paying attention to them, by giving them energy, because whatever you focus on grows. So I would notice the unkind, automatic, not good enough thoughts. I would acknowledge them and just not fight them, because if whatever you resist persists, so many people go into eating disorder recovery, in my opinion, the wrong way. They're trying to fight the eating disorder and push through it and be stronger. Well, you're going to be suffering a lot longer than you need to if you're going in it like that. So acknowledge the thought, dismiss it, and choose to focus on loving, self-kindness. And if you don't know what that feels like for you in your own head, because I sure as hell didn't, think of somebody, maybe it would have been a parent, maybe a friend, someone who speaks to you with love and kindness. Imagine that you're opening a little box in your head and they're coming out and offering you the words of self-compassion and self-kindness, and you're listening to them. And then over time, you get to replace that person. I say to some clients that I know struggle with this, imagine you've got a little Victoria box in your head. And so when you're bringing self-compassion thoughts, go and open the Victoria door and my voice will be there saying self-compassionate, kind things to you. And over time, you can replace my voice or whoever's voice you've chosen with your own voice. And the more you focus on that, naturally, you get more of that until the fear voice gets so small. It's never going to ever go, because we're human. It's part of the fear system to keep us safe, but it's not really helpful a lot of the time. It gets so small, it doesn't affect your life in any way. So it's noticing, releasing, and just dismissing the unkind thoughts, choosing to focus on love and compassion, listening to that, practicing that, and with just consistency and repetition.
Yeah,
over time.
Yeah, I think that when I was thinking about how I could start to change the inner monologue and dismiss those thoughts, and for anyone listening out there who is finding this difficult, I recommend that you try what I did, which was quite kind of using humor and trying to take away the seriousness of it, because my thoughts would be, and I'm sure you can relate, is, oh, you've done this wrong, this is the end of the world, this is terrible, that you look awful and stuff like that. And I would just be like, really? Like, is that what we're gonna say here? That's kind of crazy. And I think if you can take away the kind of darkness of it and turn it into something a bit more light, it's easier to dismiss. I just want to put that out there for people. But so
I agree. Can I add something to that? Because I think it'll be helpful. I love that you brought that up, Ivy. Healing with humor is a way forward for me. It's not accessible to everybody, but for me it was. And so what I used to do as well, I forgot about this. Turn the unkind voice into a squeaky, weird voice, oh, that's not good enough, me, me, me. And then it's like you said, that heavy, dark feeling of it's the end of the world. And it really feels true, right?
Yeah, completely.
If you turn that voice into a silly voice, automatically it just separates you from that, and it's not true. And then it lightens things up a little bit. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up for sure.
What I was going to ask you, kind of to do with learning how to change your inner monologue and accept yourself and stuff, and it will relate to weight gain, because I got a lot of questions for you about how to deal with body image, how to cope with gaining weight and the negative thoughts and stuff. And I think that what you mentioned on one of your, I think, earlier podcast episodes, I'm sorry, I sound like a complete stalker that I've just memorized every single episode you've done. But
I love it.
No, it's been so helpful, honestly. And it's the fact, I want to just recommend everyone do go and check out the Body Love Binges podcast that Victoria has made, and it's literally so much help for free. But anyway, I think an episode you did about how to use affirmations when they don't seem to work for you, because it was completely me. I was just like, I am a positive person, but I'm not a particularly exuberant person who can really believe quite extreme loving statements. At least I wasn't, and I think most people listening with anorexia or an eating disorder won't be at the time. there was something you said about how to make affirmations work, like how you can rephrase it to make them actually click in your brain a bit more when you don't believe them. I just want you to like expand on that for everyone listening, because it really helped me.
Yeah, absolutely. And so exactly to what you've just said, if you're standing in the mirror and you hate your body and you hate everything about yourself, and then you're standing with an affirmation saying, I love and accept myself as I am, it's a nice thing to say, but if you absolutely don't believe it in the slightest, it's actually not going to help, because you just feel like you're lying to yourself, and you feel even more of a failure because you don't believe what you're trying to make yourself believe when you're saying these affirmations in the mirror. And there's a reason for this. Left brain thinking is our analytical brain that thinks in words in English or the language that you're speaking in. The right brain speaks in vision and feeling. So if, and an example to show you what I mean by this, if you were looking at a menu in a restaurant and you were reading in detail about a nice burger and it tells you where the meat's from and the cheese or whatever it is, or if you just saw a picture of the burger, which one would you be able to connect emotionally with straight away? The picture or the writing?
The picture.
Right, the picture. And so in order to get us to actually relate to the affirmations we want to believe, we have to start with something that could be possible. We have to start to use our right brain, which is our feeling. So instead of saying something like, I love and accept myself exactly as I am, when you absolutely don't, I started to say things like, what if I was okay as I am right now? So you're not saying you are, because you might not believe that either. But if you create the possibility by just using the what if I was actually all right as I am, and then just leave it there without any forcing or anything like that, what happens is we have a reticular activating system in our brains. And what this means is whatever you focus on consciously, the unconscious mind goes to find evidence of that being true for you. Which also happens both ways. So if you're looking in the mirror, hating everything you see and allowing yourself to believe the thoughts that are coming in automatically when you look in the mirror, your mind will go your whole day proving that you hate yourself and your failure and all of that. If you open that door of possibility by saying, what if I didn't struggle with food every goddamn day? What if I was actually okay as I am? And just leave it at that. You'll start to notice little shifts in your day with things that are being reflected back to you. And then you'll be able to start to choose a bit more of a statement other than a what if. It might look like in a few weeks, I'm okay as I am, or I'm working on being okay with myself. So it's those little steps by step change. And you have to focus on this, because wherever you are, you are where your attention is. Whatever you focus on, you get more of. So start with what if, then start with like a really neutral, kind of a tiny bit better feeling statement. And then before you know it, you will be looking in the mirror and saying, I love and accept myself as I am. And you'll really feel that that could be true for you. And I have a belief scale from 1 to 10. And when you're using these what if and I am statements, if it's not a 6 or more out of 10 on your belief scale, then choose one that is a six or more out of 10, because that will help you to raise your thought vibration, to attract more thoughts that are like that. It will give you a chance to have evidence of actually perhaps believing that. Of course, you're not going to believe it straight away. That this is the work. But to take away the pressure, to take away blatantly lying to yourself, bring and invite the what ifs, and then like kind of go from there.
Yeah. And I wish they taught that in therapy, to be quite honest, because it really works. That's exactly what I did. Mm-hmm. It's exactly how I changed my inner monologue, whatever, that very negative voice very quickly. I think just from, because once you open up the possibility for, yeah, like what if I am fine, it actually, that holds way more truth to it than the eating disorder voice, which is often going off on completely wild rants and just tangents at you, just like, you're horrible, you're this and the other. It actually seems much more logical and sensible to believe the thing that you're offering up to yourself. But
say, what do you want to believe? Because all of life is an illusion. We see what we want to see through our thoughts, behaviors, beliefs, past conditioning. So you may as well choose to believe a thought that actually serves you, because everything's made up anyway. So
I like an easy life. I think life is a lot easier when you're not constantly just literally doing everything in your power to make your life harder. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Right. I've got another question for you. Kind of relates to what we were just talking about. Kind of about weight gain. A lot of people on that little question box I put on my story, they are very interested to know your experience with potentially earlier recovery, extreme hunger, and rapid weight gain, if that happened to you, or even throughout your eating disorder journey of going through anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, all those kind of things. How did you cope with extreme hunger? What is your advice for people maybe going through it, and potentially the rapid weight gain that comes with it?
Yeah, great question. And actually, I don't know when this is going to be released, but last night I released a, if I say so myself, epic episode about extreme hunger, especially if you're, quote, not underweight or if you think you're weight restored. Now, I experience extreme hunger, and the best advice I can give from making a shit ton of mistakes myself is to surrender to it and trust it. Because if you think about it, if you, and I say this in the episode, if you've been restricting for, let's say, 5, 10, 20 years, you've got a massive calorific debt that your body is currently in. And so if you've just eaten like 20, I mean, we're not counting calories here, but if you've just eaten like 20,000 calories, and like I said previously, like you're so physically full, you almost can't even breathe, let alone move, and you still want to eat more food, and you're there like, what the fuck is wrong with me? Like, how is this even okay? It's actually normal, because your body doesn't care about how full you are. Your body is sending you all these signals to be like, you're underweight, you need, and to be get from being underweight to at your natural healthy weight, you need to eat. So the more food you can eat, the better. Your body doesn't really care about how you feel. Your body loves you very much. It's keeping you alive. It's doing its best for you every single day. But it doesn't think like, well, you know, she's in the society we live in at the moment, so she's scared of fatness, so we're actually just going to recover really slowly. No. I think the quickest weight I've ever gained. So I'm English, so I work in like pounds and stone. You're British too anyway. Yeah. So I obviously do not weigh myself. I don't recommend anybody weigh themselves, but I was weighing myself at this point. So in 1 week, I gained like 10 pounds. And I was like, oh my God, I think no one's ever, this isn't even humanely possible, yet I've managed to do it. And I got red, like bright, really red, sore stretch marks, because my skin couldn't keep up with the weight gain. And obviously that then actually set me back into restriction. Do not do that. And I say this in my episode, like, this is why support doesn't have to be paid support. It can be my free group reaching out to you, like people who get it, who can be like, sweetheart, it's okay. This happened to me. I know how it feels. Promise me, trust the process. The extreme hunger is going to win anyway. And for me, it morphed into restriction, bulimia, and binge eating for 15 years after I was, quote, weight restored, when I actually wasn't. But even when I was being forced to eat in the anorexia recovery, they got a point where my genetics, the migration response in my genetic component was switched off. My body knew I was in a place with an abundant amount of food. And oh boy, I was eating like every hour. And I would say on average in my, it wasn't a meal plan as such, which was really good for me, because otherwise that would just be an extra rule and regulation to follow. It was how often I had to eat and the type of foods I had to eat. And that's how I work with my clients. I would guess I'd be eating at least 5,000 to 6,000 calories every day for months in anorexia recovery to get, and I say again, quote, weight restored, which wasn't even restored for me. And so with the extreme hunger, that also looks like mental hunger. People don't talk about this enough. Mental hunger looks like when you're physically full and you still want to eat, and your body's like, your tummy is really full and you still want to eat, and you feel like an alien because you're eating so much. And again, it's normal. So the best advice I would give, surrender to it, trust it. And if you can, if you're in a position to, I know not everyone isn't, and that's okay, you do the best with what you have, make recovery your full-time job. Some clients are able to leave work like for a short amount of time, and I know not everyone can do that, I get it. Can you take holidays off to because it's truly a matter of life or death?
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
So you may as well do everything you can to support yourself through your recovery, especially the early stages when you're going to be met with this extreme. Not everyone gets extreme hunger, by the way, but most people do, especially when your body's like, oh my God, yes, there's actually food. We've been restricting for like 20, 30, 40 years. Let's fucking eat. And you've just got to be the passenger to your biological instincts that are actually going to keep you alive, heal everything that needs repairing that you have no clue. For example, menstrual cycle, liver, kidneys, all of that, that your body's been using as energy because it's had no food. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and you need a lot of calories to have that work be done. So again, that word surrender to it and trust.
No, absolutely. I think when I went through extreme hunger a few times because I was, well, I think a lot of people in the beginning of recovery, they kind of, they dip their toe in a little bit and then they come back out and they get scared and they're like, oh no. And then that's extreme hunger. You have to go through it to get out of it. But I think what you said about like gaining weight very quickly, that happened to me as well. Cause also you get like edema sometimes. So like water retention, which again, like it wasn't something I was warned about by doctors. I wish I was, cause I was very freaked out. But yeah, if you are going for extreme hunger, to anyone listening, eat little and often if you can, because it just helps with the stomach. Obviously your stomach is a certain size and sometimes it can be extremely painful, so I would literally just eat and eat and eat and eat the whole day, high calorie dense foods. So
yes, that literally helps. Melt if you need to, I'm not shitting you, get pints of ice cream and melt them and drink them.
Yeah,
because don't be faffing around with loads of broccoli and loads of chicken and loads of rice. Fuck that. That you can wait till you eat normally again and you eat intuitively and you can nourish yourself with all the vegetables you like. Don't be trying to get vegetables in. Don't be trying to get in fruits in. I know I sound like a crazy person. All your body really cares about is calories right now. It needs it to survive and to thrive. So it is a case of if you cut, because I've had many clients who really struggle to like physically eat because they're just like, even though they're hungry, they're like, I'm so scared of food still. I'm eating mechanically. I'm like, right, we're going to get smoothies. We're going to put pints of ice cream. We're going to put peanut butter, coconut oil. And they're literally like, are you crazy? I'm like, yeah, but it works. Trust me.
Yeah.
And so whatever it takes. And I also want to use this opportunity, Ivy, to express. And again, I'm not berating the system, but it does need to change because so often I have clients come to me and I'm so glad they find me. They've been in inpatient treatment centers before, in and out for however many years, some of them. And the reason that they either reach KC recovery or go back to restriction is because they weight restore in quotes to what the BMI says they've weight restored to. And then the therapist or the professional is saying shit like, well, don't go and develop binge eating disorder. Like you need to cut back on your meal plan a little bit. Oh my fucking God, that I'm so like angry about that. I can't even speak right now because that is the worst thing in the entire world that a professional can ever say to anyone who has struggled from a restrictive eating disorder. There is no such thing as too much food. I don't care how much weight you've put on. Your body knows exactly what it's doing. And that's what sends people back into the restriction cycle again.
It kept me trapped. I'll tell you a little story. My dietitian, she was actually all right. I don't think she was terrible, but because this was before I started recovery. I was with a dietitian and I was like suppressing my weight intentionally. And she was all for it. She was just like, yeah, no, like, let's be stable. Like, let's keep. And it was at a low weight. Like, I was not healthy. And she was very much like, kind of encouraging it. She was just like, yeah, no, look, let's keep it stable. And when I started to enter recovery and I was like, look, I will gain weight. And I would ask her, I'd be like, well, am I doing it too much? I would want reassurance. And I would like following her meal plan, very low meal plan now that I'm looking back on it. But like, she was very much like, keep it slow, keep it steady. And I understand she didn't want to overwhelm me, but like, that's not what I needed because I already was very much like ruled by the eating disorder who didn't want me to gain weight. And I just think it's weird. Like, surely you'd want your patient to get better, like quickly, or at least like at a safe rate, but like quickly, right? I don't know. It's kind of crazy.
Well, what's happening is they're coaching, they're doing therapy, they're helping someone from their own fear of weight gain. So I don't care how qualified a therapist is. I don't care if a therapist has gone through an eating disorder themselves. You'd be surprised at how many people I have on my podcast even, and I'm noticing massive red flags. And I'm thinking, she's literally not fully recovered. She's still afraid of weight gain, and she's still living in a disorder. Yes. It might not be as the extreme as she was. She might be able to live life now, but until you rewire your fear of weight gain, which I have done, and I never in a million years thought those words would ever come out of my mouth, trust me, I can now coach someone and support someone from my truth of I am not scared of weight gain. And so therefore I can support you to where you want to be. If someone's supporting someone and they themselves are scared of weight gain, it doesn't make sense to me.
No, and I think it's such a brilliant point that you just brought up in the fact that, and I did a little spiel on my Instagram story the other day about recovery coaches who maybe are not recovered, but they're kind of selling it or whatever. I just feel like that's a topic to talk about maybe, but I want to like encourage everyone listening to please go and view your coaching service, your podcast, anything, because you can just tell from speaking to you, from listening to you, that you just kind of exude that you are living what you preach in a way. And I think it's just, really important. And so many people maybe are unaware that they're kind of still a little bit trapped. But also I think some people are kind of just okay with settling, or they're able to live a life that they're okay with. And they're kind of just accepting that maybe they will retain a bit of their eating disorder. I don't know how I feel about that, but each their own, I suppose. But
why accept when, and I think there's a key word what you said, Ivy, some of them aren't even aware. They think, okay, so now I'm not living in hellhole anymore. However, I can go out for lunch with friends. But if they're questioning if they had dessert or not, just like a quote, normal thing to think, unfortunately, in the world we live in, that's still disordered. And so in my opinion, and again, I guess this is my personality, but I show this by like, you said, the way I am, why would you be 90% recovered when you can be 100? Why? You've come so far.
Yeah.
Why would you not choose absolute freedom and body love? And it may feel so out of reach to anyone listening right now. And trust me, I get it. Ivy gets it too. But look at where we are now. If someone could interview me, if someone could go back in time, I'm 36. So this was only literally 6 years ago I started recovery. Yeah. I would say I really was living in freedom at about the age of 33. So only 3 years ago. It would have been a hell of a lot sooner. The only reason why it wasn't sooner is, number one, I'm just going to say it, I didn't have myself as a coach, just saying. I had to like fumble through myself. Number two, I kept fucking around with micro restrictions, such as, well, I'm in food freedom, but I'll only eat chocolate the weekend. And like, I was still clinging on to, I can control my weight. No, we cannot control our weight unless we're living in a restricted eating disorder. So do you want to live in a restricted eating disorder? No, you can't control your weight. Have the courage to be the authentic version of you, your authentic body, your authentic personality, your authentic self, because when you are living that, like I am, number one, you can feel it and see it. The amount of people that say to me in random shops, God, you're just glowing. And I'm like, you know what? I received that because I am, because I actually love life and I love myself. And I'm just like, you know what? This is who I am. I'm not perfect. I don't look the way I would love to look. But I'm who I am. And I'm so grateful for the journey I've been on. That's where I take people to. Why
it's
only
so
90%?
Rare. It's so rare. Honestly, like, I don't think I've ever encountered anyone like you, in the sense that you are very much like, you're there sort of thing. But yeah, no, I completely agree that no one needs to settle for half recovered. And it is amazing that you've made the difference that you've made in a relatively short period of time, given the rest of your life struggling. I think also, like, you can get to a place where you're okay and where you're, for all intents and purposes, like, your eating disorder is not ruling you anymore. And I think that's where I am. I'm not fully recovered, but I'm like, I'm good sort of thing. But I'm also working towards being fully recovered. And I think it just takes a little bit more time, and you learn along the way, you tweak things, you just continue to make progress until you reach it. But
yeah.
I do kind of take issue, and I'm sure you can probably understand where I'm coming from, where like certain people, they sell the kind of promise of fully recovered, yet they're not fully recovered, or perhaps they kind of do it in a way which is sometimes actually quite dangerous, like through lots of exercise or prescribing even meal plans when they're not qualified, to like clients who maybe have young children, underweight, need, you know, different kind of care. I just wonder, what is your opinion on that? And what's your almost advice to these coaches or potential coaches in the future? Like, they want this as their career, but they're not fully recovered, but yet they still want to help people. What's your advice to people like that, coming from a coach who, you know, is doing it right, in my opinion, at least?
Yeah, thank you, Ivy. And honestly, here's the thing, right? When I started coaching, I started my business in 2020, now we're 2023. So to be honest, as I said, when I was about 33, I really felt like I was entering the realm of freedom and love. Now I know I'm way further, but I started coaching when I felt like I was kind of there. I mean, you never get there. Now for me, it's like more of a spiritual journey and more of a like surrender to life in general journey. Like 100% I'm there with my recovery, but I want to speak to both of the points I want to speak to here with coaches. Number one, you don't have to be fully recovered in order to help somebody, right? If you're three steps ahead of somebody, you're three steps ahead. You can show that person how to get to where you are, because you can only ever teach someone, coach someone, mentor someone to the level that you're at. Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm coming from with my podcast and stuff.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong. That's so, we need this in the world. Don't wait until you're quote fully recovered to help people, because you'll be waiting for a long time. Yeah. So if you want, and you know, so there's been like 1, 2, 4 of my clients that I've had throughout the years that have actually now gone on to be recovery coaches themselves, and they've started quite quickly after their journey. Yes, there's always a lot to learn. However, if they're secure in their recovery, like you are, why would you not then, if you want to, and if you're able to support someone from where you were to where you are now? So as long as the coach is honest about what where they're at, there's absolutely nothing wrong, and it's actually very much needed, because everyone has their own energetic signature. Someone who won't be attracted to my vibe, absolutely fine, they might be attracted to yours or somebody else's. So it's just all about honesty, transparency. I'm not pretending that I'm something I'm not. If I struggle, I'll share it in a podcast.
Yeah,
so I think honesty, transparency, and that's it. And just knowing that you can help people to where you are, but don't pretend you can help them to where you're not, because you can't, because you haven't experienced it yet. You're not there.
Yeah. I think, exactly that. Just all about honesty and being self-aware, like knowing where you're at. I'm just sharing that honestly. I think it's completely right. And I think, everyone has something valuable to add to someone else. So I think it's important to have everyone kind of contributing. And I've also noticed that, as you've said, like different things work for different people. So someone who maybe hasn't made much progress at all in their recovery, maybe they've just started, but maybe they figured out a really great way of how to cope with feeling full or being bloated or something, they can share that. And I think it's just it's great to have all different people talking. I just worry, like, when I see maybe on Instagram or something, that I see sometimes recovery influencers or recovery coaches who are maybe, in my opinion at least, and I guess again everyone is entitled to their own opinion, but maybe they're not quite self-aware, and maybe they are potentially leading people down into a more disordered route, or just a different disorder. Because I've noticed that often people can just transition from maybe anorexic tendencies to go to more orthorexic, or to go to different eating disorders, which I'm sure you went through as well. So
especially in the fitness space.
Yeah, exactly.
And what I will say is a red flag to anyone listening who is perhaps seeing these type of people, and again, they're not doing it on purpose, but if you look at their content, let's say the photos they post of themselves on the stories or on the posts, you can tell, and I've watched myself. So when I get old stories come up as like a time hop thing, I look at the picture of like a selfie I've made, for example, where my body's in it. And I'm like, oh my God, I was insecure as fuck there. I can just tell the way because of the picture I've posted.
You can
so tell. And so if anybody, there's actually, I don't want to say her name because it's not fair. There's someone who I interviewed on my podcast who isn't in alignment anymore with me because she started to, and I get it, she's being different to most food freedom coaches. She started talking about weight loss, not as a necessity, but that you can lose weight. And I'm like, there's so much fucking wrong about that. It's not even scientifically correct because you can't control your weight unless you live in a restricted eating disorder. So you can't be a food freedom coach and promote weight loss is possible. It doesn't work. So anyone that is promoting weight loss of any kind, even recovery coaches who speak to overshoot weight, yeah, that's a thing. Like, let's be real. But coach who specifically tries to attract you to working with them so you can let go of the overshoot weight, stay clear, because your body's going to do what it's going to do. My body did have an overshoot weight. And again, I don't weigh myself, guessing around 12 pounds lighter now is my natural set point weight, but it happened naturally. I didn't try to get rid of my, it just happened. So anyone speaking of any kind of weight loss from any place, stay clear. And just to reiterate what I said in terms of, you can see when someone's posting a photo, if they're genuinely confident in who they are, or if they're saying they are, but the photo's saying something different.
Yeah. And that's being kind of exposed to you and your message and just your vibe as a person, and seeing the pictures you post on your Instagram, I think kind of made me, that's kind of what made my brain stop viewing weight gain as something that makes me worse in any way, because I just saw someone who'd gone through recovery, and this is not me bashing you and your past in any way, but you are just like,
you're
so much more like, you do have the glow of someone that is just really kind of, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I just think you can look to someone who, this is my advice to everyone, look to someone who has gone through what you want to go through, and you never see a recovered person who now looks worse or is less attractive. I just literally have never seen it. You've never looked at someone who's recovered and seen how confident they are. Because you build confidence going through recovery, not just in your appearance, but in every way, because you are quite literally doing something amazing. So you're obviously going to feel good about it. But yeah, I just, yeah, I want to put that out there. Like, if you want to get recovery coaching from someone, make sure that you are comfortable with them as a person and you kind of can look to them as inspiration. You know what I mean? I think it's important.
It's really important, because don't ever take advice from someone who you wouldn't want to trade places with.
Hmm.
So when I hire business coaches and things like that, I look at them as, and first of all, it's for number one for me is all about a weird, energetic, attractive vibe. I just have to have this pull to want to listen to this person's podcast. Like, my coach at the minute is actually a man called Jim Fortin. And he speaks a lot about spirituality, but also personal development. I don't know what it is about him. It's just his energetic signature that draws me to him. He says loads of fucked up bullshit around weight, but I completely ignore that. That's not why I'm attracted to him. It's the other deeper stuff, which unfortunately most people do when they use personal spiritual development. They say things about weight loss, and that's completely blows over me. But if you want to work with someone, make sure you would be willing to trade places with them. Like, if someone's trying to teach you how to increase your finances and they're in like loads of debt themselves, like, why would you then take advice from that person? So you've got to like the person you're going to be working with, and you've got to trust them. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting what you said about weight loss and how kind of irresponsible it is to kind of promise that to people in recovery or promote it. And I agree. I think that I'm not probably, well, I'm definitely not as educated as you about weights and weight loss and stuff like that, in terms of people who want that, potentially who haven't had eating disorders. So maybe we'll just leave that population out of it. But to a population of people with an eating disorder of any kind, I agree, it's very like weird to tell them that they can lose weight or that they should. And I just want to ask you, like, how did you come to terms with the fact that recovery does equal weight gain, at least in your case and in my case and in probably a lot of my listeners' cases? Like, how do you, because I remember when I was going through it, I was like trying to think, like you said, I'm trying to figure out all these ways, like, okay, well, I'll do this and I'll allow myself to do that, but I'll have to just like change that a little bit so that I don't gain this weight, or do this, this, and this, and this. How do you like just lay the line and just tell yourself that you are gonna, and this is how it's gonna work?
Well, first of all, I went back to micro restriction too many times to count, which is why it took me 3 years to really be understanding and feeling what freedom is truly like. And so I had to, unfortunately, I had to, well, I didn't have me as a coach, like I said, but I had to almost go back to remind myself that restriction doesn't work. So I had to have evidence to be like, okay, yeah, doesn't work. But if I just, okay, it doesn't work. And so I would remind myself whenever I would see old photos of myself, now I'm completely fine with all of it, but I've purposely done the work around photos. And I'll talk to Spiff a little bit about that in a minute. But when I would see an old picture of me when I was like with the abs and like, I think probably a bit too lean, but I still think I look awesome now. It's like, I still like that those photos. I would ask myself, right, what did I have to do to look like that? And I would go there and I'd be like, right, so I had to be living with a fucking bulimia. How did that feel? It felt shit, but I liked the way my body looked. Right, okay. So it's this thing like I shared with, you know, if you really want to recover or not, take responsibility, meet yourself where you're at and be like, okay, if I wanted to look like that again, what would I potentially have to do? Even if I could even do it, which I couldn't anymore, thank God, how does that feel in my body to work towards having that again? My whole body was like, fuck no.
Yeah.
So I was like, I hear you, sweetheart. Don't worry. I'm just allowing myself to go there, because for me, allowing myself to go there enabled me to be like, no, no, no. I choose freedom. I choose surrender. I'm just going to keep working on my body acceptance because this is the way for me. And there's a lot of mourning the loss and grieving the loss of this fantasy body because it's social capital, it's validation, it's all the things. Let's not pretend it isn't, because it is. But that doesn't mean anything to me anymore because I'd rather be fully me and live life authentically than be living in a restricted eating disorder.
Yeah, and it's not fun. Like, recovery kind of sucks at times emotionally, but I would think to myself, like you just said, like, you have to take into account all of it. Like, don't just, I would think, I miss, you know, being underweight because I felt emotionally numbed or whatever. But then I would be like, yeah, but you can't just pretend it was all good because you're literally forgetting 90% of it. Like, the horrible behaviors, the lying, the obsession, the horrible thinking, the behaviors like purging and stuff, which just is not fun. Like, none of it's fun. So you just got to look at the whole picture, I suppose, if you want to weigh it up. Like, do I want to gain weight? No. But then do I want to have an eating disorder? No, even more.
Exactly. And I kept choosing freedom. You need to get clear on what your values are as a person. My values did change over time, but my top value has always been freedom. And so if you work with a professional that knows what they're doing, if they know what your values are, they can help you align your values to the recovery process. And so for me, with my top value being freedom, the second value being love, is love and freedom more in alignment with restriction and having external validation and liking the way my body physically looks? Or is it more in alignment with being so free? So when I get older and my body changes again because I'm a woman, and then at some point my hormones are going to change and naturally your body, is it free to enter in life in true acceptance and surrender without like trying to micromanage your body? And is it self-loving, my value of love, to allow and nourish my body and let my body do what it needs to do? And you've got the answer right there. And with a really quick thing about photo work that I used to do with myself, I would video myself. This was the hardest thing that I had to do. I would go upstairs in my little gym and video myself doing a workout, right? And so I would only wear a sports bra and I would be naked for the rest of the time. This was just for my eyes only. And I would video myself doing a little workout. And then for my body image work, I would take a deep breath and I would press play on the video and I would notice all the thoughts that looked like this. Oh my God, look at all of my cellulite. Do I actually look like that? Oh my fucking God, I'm at all the stuff that comes up because you don't see yourself like from all angles. We have a way we look in the mirror and try and control it and blah, blah, blah. And I would just look and I would notice all the unkind thoughts and I'd be holding my heart and I'd just be there for myself. I wouldn't do anything. I would just watch and notice and be there for myself. And then when I was ready, I would start to ask myself questions like, does it matter? Does it really matter that you don't like all those, that cellulite on your legs? And when you're doing jump squats, like everything's jiggling and moving, does that really matter, sweetheart? And then I'd feel the shame and the pain and from all the past stuff, and I'd feel it and I'd let it go. And I'd be like, it doesn't matter because I'm so proud of my journey. I'm so proud of everything I've overcome to get to where I am now. And as you can see, I'm getting emotional. Like I've come so fucking far. And I am not allowing myself to go back into that mindset and those feelings because I don't like the way I look. Fuck that. Like you deserve so much better. And I'll just be with myself. And so I did the work, right? It's not like I was all of a sudden recovered and I was fine. Like I had to keep doing the work and I've done the work. And sometimes before my period, something will pop into my head like, oh my God, you're like bloated as fuck. And I'll be like, it's all right, sweetheart. You have an incredible woman's body that is working and that is healthy. And I'm so grateful because you haven't had a period for years because you were restricting.
Yeah.
And so never, it's not about living in the past. It's about never forgetting where you've come from. And one last thing, I know I'm looking at time. I want to really speak quickly, specifically to what you said, Ivy, about people who have never had an eating disorder before, who might want to lose weight. That's still going against science because every single person in the world has a unique set point weight that their body will fight to maintain both ways. If you force feed yourself, your body will fight to lose weight to get back to this set point. If you underfeed yourself, your body will fight to gain weight to get back to this set point. So yeah, people can spend all their money most of their lives, which unfortunately most people do, dieting and weight cycling and might not develop an eating disorder, but they're literally yo-yo dieting for the rest of their lives because their body will always bring them back to their set point weight. So you're literally wasting your life.
It is true. You definitely do have a set point or at least a set range. Can't really, you can deny it, but there's no point. Just everyone should go a little like research that because it makes complete sense as well. You have set ranges for everything in your body. You're an organism, you know, and if you try and, yeah, you're right, like push it too far either way, then you're going to encounter pushback from your biology. So just work with what you've got, I suppose. But yeah, I just think it's so valuable to hear you speak about that exercise you did, sitting with the shame and the feelings looking at your body. And I just think it's really amazing that you are able to go through that and then break it down for people listening, because it's so like confusing and scary. And I can imagine it was like really difficult for you. As you said, you didn't have yourself to guide you through. And I can imagine there were even less people speaking about this kind of thing at the time, because I think it's only getting more and more help and people who've recovered now sharing their story and stuff. So I think it's just important. And I think everyone listening can kind of appreciate someone breaking it down, because as I've said, like, and as you've said, there's a lot of gaps in the treatment system, whereas professionals, they might have a right idea, they might not have the right idea, they might actually be kind of disordered themselves, but they might want to help, but then equally they've not really got a clue sometimes either, and they're just, but yeah, I think it's really great that you've just like broken that down for everyone. Yeah, I think it's amazing to hear from you, and I think you are very much in a unique position that you have the experience that you've had. Now you're in this amazing position, and you also have the ability to kind of be coherent in how you speak about it, because that's a skill and it's not necessarily one that I have, but I think it's overlooked a little bit because there are some people who've recovered, they're not just naturally articulate in that way. So I just want to thank you for the way that your delivery as well as everything else. But yeah,
thank you Ivy. And I also want to say that you are exactly perfect as you are. The way you describe and refer back to your personal experience, honestly, I'm not just saying this, is perfect. And you're going to help so many people with your energetic signature who can relate to you more than I ever could, because there's a reason we're all so different in so many different ways. So thank you. And I receive what you're saying. Like, you know, I had to practice receiving as well. So if, when you hear me say I receive it, it's because I used to deflect compliments all the time. So I'm receiving it. And at the same time, you articulate yourself perfectly, really. So well, thank you also.
I will follow your example and receive it as well. You're great. You're a great role model, I think, as well, because you do, like I said, practice what you preach, and it gives other people permission, doesn't it, to also do that. It's like, wow, I didn't know that was a thing. But yeah, it's been great. Honestly, it's been amazing talking to you again. And I just want to thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else you want to say before we go?
I want to say thank you to you for giving me the opportunity to spread this message wide and far to anyone that needs to hear it. And I want to say to your listeners, recovery is 100% possible. And I promise you it is. I don't care how much past trauma you've had as a child. I care, but at the same time, what I'm saying is, I don't care that you have all these obstacles that you're telling yourself, or perhaps professionals have told yourself, the reason why you can't fully recover. That's not true. You can. And so take one step at a time, reach out to me, reach out to Ivy, reach out to support groups, decide you want better for yourself, because you deserve so much better than this life you're currently living. And so just allow that to be felt in your body, in your soul, and then you'll be guided on what to do next. And we're here for you every step.
Yeah. And you're here to provide the kind of inspiration and the proof that recovery is possible and that it works. And it's just really, really valuable. And I think I wish more people would, I don't know, I wish there were more people like you, because I think you definitely have made an impact on so many people. It's been great. And I hope you know, have a great day. Oh, and congratulations on getting married as well.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm Mrs. Kleinsman officially now. I'm so, and you know, I know we have like 2 minutes before this ends, but that again was a massive milestone for me. Number one, to get married without even the thought of I need to lose weight to fit in a dress, without that even being a thing. So freeing. Being married as the authentic version of me. And then number two, just being able to be so present in the day without being so obsessed with what I'm looking like, what my dress looks like, what to just be in the moment and to feel the love. I could never have experienced that if I was in an eating disorder. So I'm just so grateful again that the way my life's panned out, that I didn't get married until this point, because I wouldn't have been able to fully enjoy it and appreciate it for what it was if I still had the eating disorder. So
it's honestly amazing. It's literally just made me so happy just to hear that, and to, I don't know, I just think, like, I don't mean to like be negative, but you've quite literally gone through the worst of so many different things, and now you're in a place which is, in my opinion, just so much more positive than the average person. It's honestly incredible, and it is incredibly like motivating. So anyway, it's been great, and thank you so much for coming on. I hope you have a great day.
Thank you, Ivy. So much love to you, so much love to your listeners. I'll see you in the DMs.
Yes. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.